This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. With the election on the horizon, the candidates for office are spending big bucks on campaign ads. Governor Deval Patrick and his Republican rival, Charlie Baker, both started the month with more than $1 million in their campaign coffers. Now that's down to less than $300,000. A lot of that money has gone to large media buys. And the gubernatorial candidates aren't the only ones spending a lot of money on ads. There's an ugly fight in the 10th Congressional District, with both candidates furiously firing shots across the airwaves. Joining us to dig into these latest ads is media analyst and BU professor John Carroll. John, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Nice to be here.
John, let's start by talking about the 10th District race. This is the race to replace retiring Congressman Bill Delahunt. The candidates are Democrat Bill Keating, the Norfolk County DA, and Republican Jeff Perry, who's a state rep and a former Wareham police sergeant. And his role on the Wareham police is very important in this next ad.
It certainly is, because he was involved in a drug search, what started as a drug search, and then turned into a strip search of a 14-year-old girl back in the 90s. And I think that the details about that, the stories that people have told about that, are a real complicating factor in this race.
This was at a cranberry bog, a bunch of teenagers hanging out. Three police officers show up. One of them is Perry. One is a guy named Scott Flanagan. Scott Flanagan strip searches a girl.
Right. And the details came out in a police report. And the allegation about Jeff Perry is that he stood there and watched this happen and did not intervene. He was the police officer's, Scott Flanagan's, supervisor, and he did not intervene.
And what Flanagan did was order this 14-year-old to pull up her shirt and bra, unbuttoned her pants, and then Flanagan puts his hand inside her underwear and feels that part of her body. He says it's a drug search.
She says, you know, it's a violation, and she's screaming, and there's no way that Jeff Perry doesn't hear her screaming and protesting over the treatment that she's getting.
That's what she says. So Flanagan pleads guilty to illegally strip searching this girl and another one. Perry initially said he saw what happened, but there was no wrongdoing. Later, when Flanagan pleads guilty, Perry says, "I was too far away to see anything." Perry ends up resigning from the police force, although he says it wasn't related to this. Bill Keating has made this a huge part of his campaign against Perry. Let's listen to his latest ad called True Story.
A true story. Jeff Perry resigned in disgrace from the police force. One of his officers pled guilty, sentenced to 4 years for sexual assault of teenage girls. Perry was five steps away during one incident. The Boston Globe said Perry's accounts of his actions were contradicted by police records and sworn testimony. Perry still calls it good police work. Jeff Perry's got a problem telling the truth, and he hasn't even gotten to Washington yet.
I'm Bill Keating, and I approve this message.
Now, John, we could hear how ominous that is, but what we couldn't see is that there's a police cruiser in the background almost the whole time, flashing lights. It's a very dark, ominous background. This incident was ratcheted up to a new level yesterday because the victim from that cranberry bog incident made a public statement about Jeff Perry's involvement. She said that Perry was nearby when she was abused by Flanagan, and here's what she says, quote, "Perry knew what Flanagan did. He had to hear me screaming and crying." So, John Carroll, in light of all this, what do you make of Bill Keating's ad?
Well, I think Bill Keating's ad has a lot more credibility now and a lot more impact now than it did before. This was an incident that was shrouded in a number of different stories, a number of shifting stories. And the Perry camp could write it off as sort of unfounded allegations, or some said a youthful indiscretion on his part. There's a lot less ambiguity about this now. And I think what that does is make for a more effective case on Bill Keating's part and a more difficult defense on Jeff Perry's part.
Some people have said that Bill Keating is making his campaign too one note. It's totally focused on Perry and what he did at that cranberry bog or didn't do at that cranberry bog, and not about Keating himself and the issues. Is that a concern for Keating, do you think?
I think it could be a concern. You can run into backlash on this, but this is an issue of character, and he has decided not to go after Jeff Perry on jobs or on health care, but on character, and to basically say, this guy doesn't deserve to be in Washington. I mean, I think that last line he has is an interesting line. I mean, he says, he has a problem telling the truth and hasn't even gotten to Washington yet.
Right,
I mean, the assumption is that everybody who goes to Washington turns into a liar, including Bill Keating. I mean, I wonder if that's going to be the case, too. But anyway, I think this is about honesty, a sort of an honorable character. And I think that it's too appealing to Bill Keating for him to avoid it. But I think there is a line that you can go over where it starts to backlash on you.
John, after that Cranberry Bog victim released her statement yesterday about Jeff Perry, Jeff Perry released his own ad featuring Scott Brown. Let's listen to that one.
This is United States Senator Scott Brown with a message for the people of the 10th Congressional District. You have another chance to shake up the status quo in Washington on Tuesday, November 2nd, by electing Jeff Perry as your next congressman. We need Jeff working in Congress to cut out wasteful spending and get going on a jobs program that will turn our economy around. Sadly, Jeff's opponent in this race, Bill Keating, has decided to focus almost entirely on negative attacks concerning an incident that took place almost two decades ago and which didn't directly involve Jeff. These are the same ugly tactics that were used against me in my campaign for the United States Senate. You saw through those attacks then, and I hope you'll do the same now.
So as I said, this ad was released yesterday after the Cranberry Bog victim put out her statement. Now, presumably, this ad was not turned around in a few hours, but had been on the shelf, and Jeff Perry just said, let's get this thing on the air. Was this a good move for Perry?
I think it is a good move for Perry. I'm not sure it's a good move for Scott Brown. I think it puts Scott Brown in a difficult position. He has been supporting Jeff Perry. So this has been his contention all along, that this was an old incident. I'm not sure a statute of limitations exists in political situations like this. And it's an old incident, and it was something where he was only marginally involved. I mean, that's a very different statement today than it was yesterday.
John, we here at Radio Boston contacted Brown's office today to ask if Scott Brown had any intention of asking Jeff Perry to pull the ad. We didn't get a response. But do you think Scott Brown is putting himself in a perilous position by not asking Jeff Perry to pull the ad?
I think there are downsides to each of his choices. I think you may have noticed at the beginning of the ad, he has sort of this Tea Party line that he delivers about shaking up the status quo and cutting out wasteful spending. I mean, that's all sort of standard issue language for Tea Partiers. I think he's got a stake in having them be happy with him. They've been unhappy with him before. They were a force in his election back in January. So to distance himself now from Jeff Perry has real potential downside with his supporters. Not to distance himself has a real downside with the people who have a problem with Jeff Perry, but also maybe with the news media. And I think the news media are going to line up in the anti-Jeff Perry camp much more strongly than in the pro-Jeff Perry camp. What you don't want to do is have advertising that clashes with reality in the news coverage. And I think once you have a disjunction like that, you're in a much more difficult and perilous situation from a political standpoint.
John, there's another political ad getting attention in this race that focuses on the same strip search issue. It's from a Democratic group called the America's Families First Action Fund. It's not associated with any candidate. The reason it's getting attention is that some Cape radio stations yanked the ad from the air because they weren't sure if the content was accurate. We have not been able to hear the ad because most traces of it seem to be gone, but it apparently is some sort of graphic description of the strip search. The stations weren't sure it was correct. The Globe fact-checked the ad and concluded that the description of the strip search was accurate based on the victim's testimony. Aside from whether the ad was accurate or not, it's been put up by a group that is not associated with a candidate. Are these the types of groups that we can expect to see doing these more controversial ads because the candidates have some distance from them, so it's a little bit safer?
I think in theory that's the way it works, that the candidate wants the third-party entities to do the dirty work for them. I think it's very hard, though, to distinguish one from the other now. You see these ads come flying by, and there is the disclaimer at the end, and we paid for this ad. But a lot of times they're just going to get mixed up together. And so I think the idea of this bright line between the campaign and the advocacy groups or the activist groups is something that doesn't really hold up all that much. It's an interesting situation with these third-party groups because radio stations and television stations are not required to run their ads by any means at all. And the three Cape stations were concerned about potential litigation, and that's a problem for them. They are required to run ads for candidates for federal office. So if Keating had submitted this ad, they would have been in a much more difficult position. But their call was that it wasn't accurate enough by their standards to actually put on the air.
John, let's talk about the latest ads in the governor's race. Here's the most recent one from Governor Deval Patrick.
He wants you to hire him for his management skill, but as state budget chief, Charlie Baker's two massive failures cost us dearly. He wrote the Big Dig Finance Plan, piling up debt, $800 million in toll hikes. Then Baker helped deregulate the health insurance industry. His profits soared, and so did our premiums. Deval Patrick's fighting to lift our middle class, protecting education and health care, leading the nation in job growth. Deval Patrick, for us.
Now, John, last time you were here to analyze the ads, Deval Patrick was focused on his record. In this one, he's much more on the attack. He's going after Baker and what he calls Baker's failures. What do you make of this new approach?
Well, I think he's moved from the positive ads to the split 30s. And this is sort of a standard ad format where in the beginning you do the negative part and then you end with the more positive part. So that's the feeling that that people wind up with.
So a little of both, a little good, a little bad.
A little good, a little bad. I mean, this ad is interesting because it makes Baker sound like he was governor back in the 90s. and I think that's what actually Deval Patrick wants. He wants to tie Charlie Baker very much into the administration back then and say, you know what, he delivered, but he delivered the wrong results.
Okay, here's Baker's response.
Remember his promise?
I have no plan to raise taxes.
But he did, 8 times. Over $1 billion-plus a year in new taxes. Property taxes? They've only gone up. Unemployment doubled, highest in 34 years. A record of failure. So now Patrick attacks businessman Charlie Baker for saving Harvard Pilgrim. Desperate Governor Patrick even attacks Baker for rate increases Patrick himself approved. Had enough? Charlie Baker, the strong leader Massachusetts needs.
So this is Charlie Baker hammering Deval Patrick. Is that effective?
I think that he's about Charlie Baker has been about jobs and job performance. That's what his campaign is all about. I mean, I think the desperate Governor Patrick. If you look at Deval Patrick, he doesn't really seem all that desperate. And I think that seems to be a little bit melodramatic. But both of these ads from Patrick and from Baker are about what this other guy cost you. You know, it's all about your pocketbook. It's all about how, premiums went up. It's all about Big Dig financing costing the taxpayers. It's all about Deval Patrick raising taxes. It's all about financial cost to you from the other guy. So I think that's what they mainly want to imprint on the voters' minds.
This ad says that Deval Patrick broke his no new taxes pledge, but then it has footage of Patrick saying, "I have no plan to raise taxes." Is that the same thing as a promise?
No, and Deval Patrick would say, "I never made a promise not to raise taxes." It's the same as candidates who always leave the door open running for president. You know, I have no plans at the moment to run for president, but look for me in about 6 months to come back and have another interview here.
All right, John, let's now hear the latest ad from independent candidate Tim Cahill.
Imagine one of 9 kids who dreamed big and won. Tim Cahill, a Quincy boy who wrestled in college, then coached. Opened a small business because he needed a job. Married Tina, had 4 girls, taught them right from wrong. Quincy City Council, one of America's best treasurers. Now Tim is running for governor, the only candidate who is one of us. Tim Cahill, a different direction for different results.
All right, we've got trumpets, we've got cymbal crashes, we've got what sound like Top Gun engines. What we don't see is this trail of photographs from his childhood, from his prom.
Yeah, this is a really weird commercial. The timing of it is weird and the production of it is weird. I mean, I thought the music sounded more like an Olympics opening ceremony, actually. But it's strange production values. It's some strange narration. Had 4 girls, taught them right from wrong. I mean, that just comes out of nowhere. And maybe he's trying to remind you of a spot he did before. But it's very strange. Overall, trying to establish himself as a different direction for different results. This has been the struggle that Tim Cahill has had all the way through this campaign. It's some justification for why he's an independent and why he left the Democratic Party. And I'm not sure this one gets him over the hump.
There's obviously a lot of drama going on in the Cahill campaign. He sued his former aides. His aides say he was illegally using his Treasury influence to do his ads. Yet in his advertisements, Cahill stays positive, whereas we've already seen Charlie Baker and Deval Patrick going negative. What do you think about Cahill in his ads continuing to be sunny and positive?
Well, I think it's admirable, but it's the noble loser syndrome, and I think that you have to admire him for sticking with what he said. I mean, those guys left his campaign, his strategist and his campaign manager, because he wouldn't go negative. And I just think that this ad here, it feels a little early. There's always at the end of a campaign this sort of inspirational phase, which is, you know, I see a Massachusetts where everybody has a good job, you know, where the Red Sox win the World Series every year. You know, that usually comes maybe 5-7 days before the end of the campaign. This feels like it's a little early. I would be doing issue ads a little bit more now if I were him, because he still hasn't established that compelling reason to vote for him instead of one of the other two candidates.
Three. Let's talk about one more ad, although this one we cannot play because it hasn't been released yet. But it's been written about. There's an article in today's New York Times. It's an ad in the Barney Frank, Sean Bealot campaign. Bealot is the 30-something Marine from Brookline challenging Barney Frank and seemingly making Barney Frank a little nervous. Apparently, this ad will have a female dancer dressed in a fat suit with a tie askew intended to look like Barney Frank. Then Barney Frank's head is technologically superimposed on top of the dancer dancing around goofily. The intended message is that Barney Frank dances around the issues. John, this is an ad that is primarily meant to go on the web with the hope that it will then go viral. It's also clearly meant to ridicule Barney Frank. What is your take on that kind of approach?
Well, first of all, I think trying to make something go viral very often guarantees that it will not go viral. Also, I don't know that a preview in the New York Times really establishes your viral cred or not. But the idea that you create something that is interesting enough to get passed around on the Internet is not a bad idea. The bad idea here for Sean Bealot is that this is completely in conflict with his image. This is not something that's consistent with how he has presented himself throughout the campaign. And I think this has a greater chance of backfiring on him than actually working. And I think the people it does work with are not going to be people who vote. So I think there's a lot of potential downside to this. I could be wrong. I'm often wrong. But I mean, I think that this may take off, but I think this may actually have more impact in the mainstream press to bring criticism to Sean Bealot at a time when he's really developing some momentum. So I just wonder about the wisdom of this.
John, thanks again for coming in the studio.
Always a pleasure, Sasha. Thanks.
John Carroll is a media analyst and a professor at BU. He blogs at campaignoutsider.com. Up next, it isn't easy running a restaurant, let alone a restaurant and three bakeries, but that's what Joanne Chang of Flower Bakery and Myers & Chang does. She'll be in the studio shortly to answer your questions, and you can start calling now at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, or tweet us at Radio Boston. Stay with us. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.